Hello, hello, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ewa Pospieszyńska. I think it's the first time I said my full name, and now you understand why. And I'll be hosting today's episode with Anna Oppenheim, so as per usual. And we'll be talking about abortion, more specifically abortion access and abortion rights in Poland. But we will be situating this discussion in a broader context, especially in light of what have been recently happening in US. And we're joined by Martyna Jałoszyńska, who's a Polish socialist feminist and a very impressive organizer who was at the forefront of the protests that were happening in Poland in 2020. Martyna will be sharing her experience around organizing in Poland. We will be testing a bit of a different format tonight because we do want to actually have a more of a conversation, more of a discussion between ourselves and not a sort of interview format. We really want to exchange the experience because we were all involved in the protests back in 2020. I was in Poland at that time. Anna was briefly in Poland at that time. Anna has a very interesting article in Navarra Media that I will link in the description, so please go and read. And I actually have written an article with Dan Davison. Hi, Dan, if you're listening. You can find it in New Politics, and it's a very long piece that basically analyzes lessons in the fight for abortion rights in the US, in Poland, and in Argentina. So it is very connected to this episode.
So we will be talking a little bit about, you know, where the world is going. How does Poland fit into that? There is some like similarities and differences, but we also want to zoom in on what's happening in Poland specifically, the state of the movement, and what next.
Right, Martyna, so if you could introduce yourself a little bit.
Hi, my name is Martyna, and I am a member of a left-wing party called Together, Razem in Polish. I'm also a feminist activist, and I was engaged in protests during 2020, during the strikes.
Maybe before we go into that, I want to ask Martyna a little bit more about your background. Kind of, how did you get interested in women's rights? How did you get involved in feminist activism?
Well, I don't know exactly where that started, but I think I got engaged into it like 4 or 5 years ago. That's when I like consciously started calling myself a feminist. And that was when I started my Instagram account. So that's when I started writing more about feminism and reading more social issues, access to work, access to reproductive rights. And then I moved to Warsaw and I joined Razem. And then 2020 happened, and after that, this is basically what I do if I'm not working.
Is it time to talk a little bit about the context, about the state of abortion law in Poland currently? Maybe a little bit of history, you know, where it came from, what the debate's been over the past, you know, I don't know, years or decades, however far you want to go back, and how it happened that it was restricted.
Yeah, basically, abortion in Poland right now is almost completely forbidden. If you want to talk about current state, I think we have to move back to 1993. And that's when this new bill was introduced. It was so-called compromise, which allowed to have abortion only in like three situations.
And these three exceptions were rape or incest, a threat to the pregnant person's health, or the third one, fetal abnormalities, right? Incurable life-threatening disease or irreversible impairment.
Third one is the one that was cancelled in 2020. For 20 so years, we had these three conditions, and we have had about thousands of abortions per year. And most of them, like 90% of them, were because of this third condition. And when it was, when they decided in 2020 that it is illegal, It basically made abortion completely illegal in Poland.
When it comes to the actual numbers of abortions, we know that unofficially there are between 80,000 to 200,000 abortions a year. Back in the 80s, where abortion was possible to obtain legally, the official statistics were around 140,000 a year. So we would say that probably it could be somewhere there. Obviously, the access to contraception has changed. And nowadays, the main method to perform abortions is through taking abortion pills. That method is the safest. It's actually possible to do it without any support of the medical personnel. The only issue is around obtaining those pills, right? So in Poland, it's not very easy to get them. But still, I'm sure we will be talking about certain organizations that run in Poland which provide those pills.
Before 1993, abortion in Poland was very common because since the 50s, 53, 54, we had a bill that was very liberal. There was another condition when women was in a hard social situation. So she had to declare that. No one was checking that. She just had to say it is what it is. Then 1989 happened. The government basically made a deal with the church, and they sold our rights for the support from the church. And then we had over 20 years of religious propaganda, which created a completely different situation, because the view of the public changed drastically, because they were like hearing for over 20 years that abortion is wrong.
What I find interesting when I'm reading about this is that in 93 there wasn't majority public support for this like so-called compromise, right? There are obviously strong feelings and movements on both sides, you know, pro-choice and very anti-choice. It was presented as a compromise, but really, like, for most people, abortion was just a fact of life. But public opinion shifted since then, right, towards kind of accepting the new status quo. And I think it's something that's like a bit erased from history, the kind of, you know, pro-choice movement we had in the 90s, right? I think a lot of people have put a narrative that it just kind of happened. It was an agreement between like men in suits and like men in the church, and women are just not involved in that. Whereas no, there was resistance, right? But it just wasn't strong enough to stop it.
I'm actually so glad we're getting to the bottom of this by speaking about the role of the Catholic Church in Poland in the stigma and in basically the effort to ban abortion. And I think it's also very important to mention that they were given the platform to do that. Basically, since 1992, had different deals with the government. There was a concordat signed, there was a bill that basically compensated the church for the time of the when Poland was a part of a Soviet bloc, when the church couldn't run officially, when assets were basically frozen. And it opened up this opportunity for them to also kind of building on all these sentiments that Polish society had with the church, building also on the fact that John Paul II was the Pope at that time, to push for those narratives. There was Radio Maria that they set up in 1991, a lot of different magazines like Gość Niedzielny, and it's all part of this propaganda that the Polish church is pushing, and it just wasn't very much addressed up until 2020, I think.
I guess before we start talking about 2020, like, it's impossible to do that without talking about 2016. Which I thought, in terms of kind of public consciousness and in terms of like level of organization of feminists in Poland, was a kind of pivotal moment. Like, what's your memories of 2016 for like our British listeners, I just explained that 2016 was the current government's kind of first attempt to further restrict abortion access.
There was a proposal presented by ultra-conservative organization to completely ban abortion and also to punish women. That's when the first protests started. The first ones were actually organized by Razem, but few days later, Marta Lempert, who is now a leader of Women's Strike, she called for strikes all around Poland, and then that's when Women's Strike emerged.
Yeah, no, I remember it was absolutely massive. And that's, I think, when like the idea of being a feminist was starting to be reclaimed by a lot of Polish women, where it kind of became more mainstream. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yes, but also we have to remember that this first protest was different than the last one. I mean, the one in 2020, because it didn't like directly attack the church, and also the slogans were different. They weren't that radical. In this protest, there were also many women who supported the compromise. They just didn't want it to change. They didn't want the abortion to be legal and available for all women.
Yeah, I agree. There's a difference in the tone and the like language of the kind of two movements. But I do think that 2016 kind of laid the foundations for 2020 possible. Like created the infrastructure in terms of organizations, in terms of local networks that then could be reactivated.
I think if we were talking about 2016, we have to talk about something else. What I mean is in 2016, the Abortion Dream Team was created. And I think this is a very important moment for Poland, because that's when this famous cover came out with, you know, the pink cover with three girls who had these white t-shirts with the slogan, "The abortion is okay." So this was very controversial back then. Now it would be considered maybe a bit controversial, but not as much as back then. And I think the work of Abortion Dream Team is it's one of the biggest, you know, impacts on abortion debate in Poland, because what they did, they completely moved like the Overton window. Without them, we wouldn't be where we are now.
Yeah, I remember like the shock when that cover came out, people being like, wow, these are kind of women talking about abortion with no shame, no apologies, no kind of caveats. This is just for like, oh, extreme situations. Like, no, it's actually fine.
Yeah, so I would agree with both of you that 2016 definitely is, on the one hand, a big breakthrough, a moment where we finally seeing some mobilization around this issue for the first time since probably this first bill in 1993. We're seeing feminist organizations, we're seeing Abortion Dream Team, which opens up the discussion, but also educates people about actual methods of abortion and actual ways of accessing it. What happens next? Should we talk about 2020 now? Because I assume this is where we will spend most of our time. So 2020 is when the Constitutional Tribunal have decided that the fetal abnormalities exceptions will be scrapped, and only those two other exceptions will now be there, but generally no legal abortion in case of fetal abnormalities. So for the doctors being involved in that sort of abortion, it threatens them with imprisonment. It means also that if you provide someone with abortion pills, you can be liable. Where were you at the time of this announcement? I remember that I was at the time in Warsaw, and I remember my initial anger, the feeling of absolute just wanting to go out on the streets and protest that shit. And that basically is what happened. And I think that was what most women thought when they heard about this.
I remember I was sitting at home and I was watching the, announcement of this decision. And I remember I was crying. And because, of course, I suspected what they are going to say, but still it was shocking. And I remember that I think half an hour later we were already organizing a protest close to the tribunal. We at first just wanted to, stand there with the panels, but we talked to other organizations and people were really angry. So we started with the candles, but I think like 20, 30 minutes during the protest, other people started to come, started becoming a regular protest, which lasts a few hours, and it was during COVID. So the police came and they started, threatening us that they will arrest us because there is a pandemic and it's dangerous and all of that. But then the women's strike came and they were starting, encouraging people to go to the place where the head of law and justice, Jarosław Kaczyński, where he lives.
Ludzi jest zawsze więcej niż struktur. Ludzi jest zawsze więcej niż wojska. I ludzi jest zawsze więcej niż policji.
Which was on the other side of the city. So it was quite a walk. And it was actually very smart because the walk was through the whole city. So many people joined during that. And that was the day of the announcement.
Yes, and the protests lasted for a very long time, the whole of October. Then they continued in November. In November, really, they peaked in terms of the numbers. There were hundreds of thousands of people walking the streets all over Poland. Then December, and in January, actually, there was a bit of a change because the judgment was actually officially sort of implemented. So for it to become the law, it needed to be acknowledged by the parliament. And they were postponing it until January. And on the 27th of January, it became an official law. And I guess because of different reasons, protests started to wither away slowly. They were still happening in January 2021. They were happening all over the world, really. There were huge protests in front of the embassy here in London. Even in the Piccadilly Circus, it was absolutely massive.
And I guess the remarkable thing about 2020 was that it wasn't just, Warsaw, Krakow, your usual suspect big cities. It was small towns, it was tiny villages of a few hundred people that still managed to have a protest, right? The movement that happened in 2020 has been described probably correctly as the biggest movement since Solidarność in Poland, right? It was like, the scale of it cannot be like overestimated, but ultimately it failed, right? That the change did happen. And I don't know if you have any reflections, I mean, I bet you do, about what went wrong or what lessons feminists can learn from the future.
I don't think, I mean, I didn't think that our protest would change the law. I was pretty sure that it would happen. I think with that, and also with presenting, you know, the bill recently, the legal abortion bill, I think the main thought behind it was to actually change the view of the public, because without that we won't change the law. Of course, there were things that could have been done better. For example, like you said, these protests were also in smaller cities, and I think we should have done more for them, like, you know, to show these women how to organize these kind of things to have a larger impact on smaller cities. But I think even if we did like twice as much as we did, it wouldn't change the fact that abortion would be banned in Poland for at least a few years. But the thing, you know, we wouldn't have this breakthrough in public opinion without that. So it actually, I think that thanks to what happened, the you know, the bill that allows abortion for all women will be passed sooner than later.
I think the reason why in Poland specifically it looks like the movement was quite reactionary is because the main organization that we briefly mentioned, All Poland's Women's Strike, was very hard to navigate in terms of the actual structures. So the leaders for this organization sort of emerged in a very like unofficial way, sort of people who were behind organizing many protests back in 2016 took the lead. So here Marta Lempart and Klementyna Suchanow were very recognizable, and they became sort of spokespeople for a lot of women in Poland that were protesting at that time. The problem with that organization, in my opinion, was that it was registered as a charity. That means you have a board and you can collect money and maybe support and fund different actions, or maybe like a specific campaign, but you basically make it impossible to join, and you cannot ever have like a membership organization. You cannot really create a democratic structure where people can vote for a specific program and then push for it and gain political leverage. In fact, charities are not supposed to be very political. They cannot do many things, and this created all sorts of problems. And I think those who kind of took those roles that shaped the movement, such as Marta Lempart, were very open about the fact that they don't want any structure that would be maybe party-like. I also specifically searched for one of the interviews back from December 2020, when Marta Lempart was interviewed by the newspaper called The Republic. And in that interview, she said that her dream is for the women's strike organization to be like the largest help desk, civic help desk, that sort of provides support and facilitates the actions that are done by grassroots movement. So it's very difficult to see how that is supposed to work.
Yeah, I think there was for a long time a disconnect between women's strike. Like, their credit do provide a lot of the infrastructure, especially in kind of big cities, right, to attract media attention. But like them as an organization and the more grassroots movement, which, you know, certainly people organizing in kind of smaller towns and villages don't have a kind of organizational backing. But even in big cities, there is no kind of structures you can join and to share the direction of the organization, right? There isn't. There is a kind of like top-down focus, right, in a grassroots one, but the grassroots movement kind of still exists and networks still exist. But yeah, that's definitely, there's kind of been sort of clashes between the leaders of Women's Strike, who are very open about the kind of like centrist political sympathies, and some like organizers from the left. So yeah, that's also something that has been going on, and that potentially, you know, potentially could be damaging. Although, you know, I feel like there's sort of space for all and both, to be honest. Like, I want there to be radical left groups organizing for women's rights, and I want there to be more moderate groups organizing for women's rights. Like, I think there's space for both.
I agree that there is a space for both, but I also think that the key lesson is addressing the organizational question, actually thinking of how do you go about creating that political leverage. And we have some examples of this being done very well by feminist movements, such as in Argentina, and we should really try and make the most out of those.
This is maybe the right time to talk about kind of public opinion in Poland. So obviously, as we said, it kind of became more conservative since the 90s. But what can we see now, following years of protests? Like, where are people at?
You know, it's, of course, it depends on how you ask the question. But latest polls show that around 66% of people in Poland support right to abortion. So of course, if I don't want the referendum, but if we were to do a referendum, I think it would the right to abortion would win. Of course, like I said, it depends on how you ask the question, but it really changed since 2020. I think even the people who supported compromise has changed their mind. And especially when you're looking at the opinion of the political parties, the largest opposition party, Civic Platform, they were the main supporter of the compromise. And now they're openly talking about the fact that they support the right to abortion. They want women to consult with psychologists and gynecologists, which is also not what I would want, but it's a very different point of view than like 3 or 4 years ago.
It's a step forward. And I remember making arguments at the time in 2020 that by attacking abortion rights, the right actually opened the window for the law to be liberalized in the kind of near future by just like undermining this like compromise that we kept being told is the only way to avoid civil war. If Sikh doesn't end up leading the next government, which seems likely, I'm kind of very curious, because there's going to be some intense debates, you know, within that coalition, whatever the coalition might end up being. I mean, that's speculation, right? But it's going to be an interesting time.
I think, you know, they had to compromise. Of course, it's obvious that this current, you know, perspective for abortion comes from this young women in Civic Platform. It's not coming from the old men. And they had to find a compromise, but I really believe that if we win the next election, I mean, if the opposition wins, they will have to pass this bill.
There is also a whole network of organizations that support women practically get abortions, right? Whether that's helping women travel abroad to places like, you know, London, Berlin, like Czech Republic, other places, but also to have an abortion at home, because like having an abortion itself is not illegal. Performing one is illegal, right? So there's a little loophole that actually, if you have the pills at home, you're allowed to take them. So these organizations exist, but I guess here we'll probably soon talk about the case of Justyna and the ongoing trial.
Regarding Justyna, she's one of the activists of Abortion Dream Team, and she's facing the trial, as you said, but it's because she helped one of the women in need. There was a woman who needed an abortion and she didn't want her partner to know, and Justyna helped her. She gave her the pills, because they ordered, I think they ordered the package, but it didn't come through. And she gave this woman her pills, and the partner found out and he told the police. And this is what's important, that normally what they do there and how they do it. They communicate with women, but they using like the international supporters to deliver the pills. But Justyna, she just decided that she had to do something more. And unfortunately, you know, this this man that found out told the police, and that's why she's facing the trial. This is like a bit different situation. But there were two hearings during the second one. They decided it will be postponed to October. And she has large support from Poland, from other countries, from many feminist activists. Abortion Dream Team claims to help around 100 women every day to get an abortion. So this is also, you know, what they do, what they've done for past 7 years. It's like laughing the government in the face with how they openly are talking about how you can get the abortion, how you can order the pills, that you can call them. There's available the number available everywhere, that during the protest it was like written on the walls of the whole city. So this is also, I think this was also what gave many people, you know, strength to keep going, because they know that even if the wars happen, they will also be able to get help. And of course, this was also what made the situation less difficult, because thanks to the protest, this number and this organization became more popular.
Right. Yeah, I must say that was, I think, probably like one of the biggest wins of that movement in 2020. So many people were writing that number. Everyone were shouting it. That was even a slogan. People were memorizing that number. It was written on the walls of the churches, which is absolutely unthinkable even 3 or 4 years back.
7, 2, 9, 7, 2, 9, 7. In terms of current context, I also wanted to ask about the proposal for a register of pregnancies. Like, can you explain what was that? Like, where does it come from and how serious this is?
Yeah, right. Just to give a quick context, in June this year, so in 2022, the health minister, Adam Niedzielski, approved this new ordinance expanding the kind of information that can be stored in a central database on patients. And that database includes things like allergies or blood type, and now is going to also include a pregnancy status. It's not yet compulsory, but I think we have, like, they've announced it will be.
When you talk about the registration, well, the register, you have to, you know, think about the fact that this is Poland, because normally in other countries this probably wouldn't be an issue, because no, this is just an information for the doctor. No one else is allowed to this information. Maybe like the first aid, no one else, but. It creates like an opportunity to, you know, to future, to change the law, to make access to abortion even more difficult, to, you know, control women. And that was that's what the activists are afraid of.
Well, I would actually disagree that this is dangerous only in the context of Poland. I would say that having something like a register of pregnancies is absolutely dystopian in any country, especially in the context of the patriarchal society that we live in, no matter the place, right? As we will be discussing soon, whether you live in the US, whether you live in UK, there's always a threat of that being used against you. And also it creates a risk of basically anyone who helps with the abortion to be like, for that to be discovered by the government and potentially being investigated, and then sort of leading to more and more cases such as Justyna's in the courts. So, I mean, we can probably put aside the debate whether there's any need for this or not. As we said, we definitely agree that in terms of Poland, this is a very dangerous development, right?
You know, around the world, we've seen cases of like women going to prison for miscarriages. Like, I don't think that will happen in Poland tomorrow. but it kind of opens the door to kind of more investigations and more of the police looking into women's private lives, potentially. So should we talk a little bit about international context? It's obviously, as I said at the beginning, you know, we're having this discussion in the context of Roe v. Wade, where once again, it wasn't, a kind of elected body passing a bill and using kind of like legitimate political means to change the law. It was a heavily politicized court, obviously also influenced by well-funded campaigns with links to Christian right. Sounds very familiar to us in Poland, right? When like attempts passes through parliament failed, the government and the far right like use a heavy politicized court to do that. I know Eva has written about this. Are there any more kind of like similarities and differences worth pointing out between the two countries?
In summary, on June 24th this year, Supreme Court in the United States overturned Roe v. Wade. And now what it means in practice is that states can decide on their own what they want to do around abortion. A lot of them had actually prepared trigger bills, trigger laws that came into power overnight, which means that places like Texas, like Louisiana, abortion is actually in this very moment already not performed. What I would say is that there is a definite point of comparison in terms of the way the right-wing side, the conservatives sort of made that come to become a reality, that there was a very similar debate in terms of stigmatizing women who have abortions, that there were already attempts to decrease the access to abortion, and that that movement was very mobilized over the past 50 years, and they really kept this on the agenda. And yeah, I guess that shows just how fragile the laws can be and how you can't take that for granted. And I would also, just building on what we said, highlight the role of the religious sort of people, right? Because the very big group of evangelists and Christians was actually organizing the anti-choice movement. And they really tried to access all different communities to basically say that this is a murder. And yeah, I guess that shows just how fragile the laws can be and how you can't take that for granted. And you need to continue linking the fight for abortion with women's rights, because it's not just a separate thing. It's actually very much something that is constantly attacked, right? And that is threatened. On the surface, it seemed like actually in the case of US, it was the feminist side that was winning. But I guess what this shows is how fragile the women's protection of the is even in the places like US. I mean, maybe especially in places like US.
Like you said, women's rights are never given forever. We can constantly fight for them. But what's very important, I think, is that the conservative movement was always, they had a plan. And the feminist movement doesn't have a plan, because we are reactive, and we are reacting for what's happening. And they had a plan that they implemented. Like you said, they were implementing it for years in Poland, in Europe, in the US. And there is this document. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's called Restoring the Natural Order. It's about the organization, kind of organization that is called Agenda Europe. The document was created by Secretary of the European Parliamentary Forum on Population and Development, so it's a legit document. And basically it's telling us that there is this movement in Europe of ultra-conservative politicians and activists that created what's called Agenda Europe, and they created a specific plan for what kind of rights they want to implement in the countries, and how they want to do this. And when they know that they won't be able to do it, for example, with creating like civic bills, like in Poland, for example, they do it sort of like backdoor, exactly how it's happened in Poland, is exactly how it has happened recently in the US. And they have the whole plan, laws to repeal, laws to adopt, like non-legislative actions. For example, prohibition of the contraceptives, like abolition of any equality legislation, like prohibition of same-sex marriages. They have a whole plan. And it's for Europe, but I'm pretty sure there is some kind of similar movement in the US. And I think it's very important that we talk more about it, because we won't be able to change what's happening if we remain reactive. They are already a few steps ahead of us, and they have resources, because there are very prominent politicians among them. They have money, they have support from Russia, all of that.
I don't fully think we should maybe say, just like generalize all the feminist movements and say that they're reactive. And it has a connotation of, oh, women are emotional and they respond emotionally and they just don't have any plan. I don't want us to sort of give that sort of message, while also obviously criticize the feminist movement, because I partly agree with what you said, Martina, that there are a lot of issues with feminist organizing.
I find something quite like painful and unpleasant when people say that the end of Roe v. Wade in the US is the fault of the failures of the feminist movement. Like, on one hand, yes. On the other hand, like, look what they're up against, right? People who have like powerful financial interests behind them. It's also the result of kind of, you know, multiple things that happened. Ruth Bader Ginsburg like not retiring at the right time, Trump being president at the time. Like, it is all about the balance of power, as well as like the failures of individual activists and the movement, you know, not organizing hard enough. I think it's we shouldn't be too defeatist.
I think we should basically think of what can be improved, while also acknowledging that it's just not an easy battle, because I think in the US specifically, the problem with what was like, what sort of protection was there, was that over this 50 years that Roe v. Wade was dictating the law, there were virtually no attempts to legalize through the Congress. So there was no actual legislation. And basically the mistake there was that the feminist movement actually sort of assumed that Supreme Court's protection is enough. And that was a mistake, because unfortunately, this is too fragile, and we should not put that much hope in the structures such as Supreme Court. So, and another thing that sort of feeds from that is, you need to remember that beside the law, even if you have absolutely legal abortion, that still does not mean that the abortion is actually accessible. And that was visible in the United States. There were so many attacks on the abortion clinics. There were so many situations when women who, in theory, should be able to access abortion actually couldn't, because of so many obstacles.
Yeah, like states finding loopholes to make it harder and harder, right? Or even like defunding clinics, things like that, right? So yeah, no, totally. But I definitely agree. And once again, it's a parallel, like, you know, US and Poland, that the fact that it was kind of taken for granted by the democratic establishment, like people who are like pro-choice, that like, you know, this is like settled now, we don't need to touch it. That was a failure. I mean, in Poland, on the other hand, we had, you know, liberal or like nominally social democratic governments also not using the opportunity of being empowered to push the law in the other direction. Like, that was also a failure of people who are nominally, you know, sympathetic towards feminists. And sure, perhaps of the movement for not pushing for that hard enough, but there needs to be kind of multiple elements that come into play for that law to meaningfully change. And I guess that also brings us to the situation in the UK currently, right? Because the situation in the UK currently like reminds me of, Poland behind the Iron Curtain, where abortion was technically, you know, is not like framed as a right. It was technically only allowed in certain circumstances, but it was just kind of accepted that if you need it, you'll get it. That's like now in the UK, it's still like in theory a criminal offense, but in practice, you know, if you get like doctors to agree, which you generally do, you can get it. But, and I, you know, I don't see a huge like counter movement here currently. I don't think it's like, it's a kind of immediate threat, but at the same time, like we saw Dominic Raab like the other day in Parliament asked about this and should abortion rights be enshrined in law, saying no. We saw the government actually quietly trying to get reproductive rights and body autonomy removed from a kind of international statement about like women's human rights. It's not a legally binding thing or anything, but it's still like symbolically aligning themselves with people who are sympathetic to religious rights. So there is, I don't know, it kind of rings alarm bells that even if that's not what these people believe, they will also prioritize alliances with the far right against, you know, what they would like performatively say is common sense.
Definitely. And I'm afraid the mistake we also see in the UK is that there is that sort of assumption that, oh, we already won that battle, so we don't have to really do that much around it. And since there seems to be like a consensus that, okay, this is something that is happening, the abortions are happening and we should not bring any obstacles to that. Actually, there's quite a lot of signs that there are already people who are trying to make that more and more difficult. And I think that's probably partly why I wanted to have this podcast, you know. And that's also what Marzena spoke about in our previous episode that I recommend you to listen if you haven't yet.
We talk about this all the time. We're seeing that with trans rights that then kind of leads into homophobia, right? Like things that would be unthinkable to say 5 years ago. Now even people who like consider themselves or are seen as progressives just come out with like outrageous statements.
Obviously, US is a great example of that because whatever happens there is a good indication of possibility to happen somewhere else. And unless we decide to treat it seriously, we might just wake up one day here in the UK with someone basically, I mean, as we did with Brexit, with someone arguing against the free movement, against abortion, against trans rights. And this sort of becomes a reality very quickly because influencing also that... that narrative is very easy when you have a lot of resources to back it up.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about the kind of threat of the global far right, how things can change like very suddenly. And there's sort of like two tendencies in the world currently on abortion rights. Because on one hand, you have countries like the US, you have Poland, you have like Russia and Hungary that haven't, you know, moved as far as that, but have also been kind of noises and like, you know, more subtle ways of restricting access to abortion. So that's kind of one side of the story. But I think it will be quite a sort of Western-centric worldview to only talk about the threats, because on the other hand, around the world, you know, a lot of it in like Latin America, there have been like successful movements to liberalize abortion law. The example of Argentina, I think, is one that we have to talk about.
I agree. So obviously the picture is never so bleak. Like there are examples of feminist movements that were very persistent and very successful in pushing for abortion rights and more widely women's rights. And they really had a huge success. So Argentina achieved like liberalization of abortion law in 2020. So at the time when Poland was protesting the Constitutional Tribunal's judgment, they were celebrating because... now Argentina has abortion permitted up to the 14th week of pregnancy, and it is a groundbreaking win because they were basically having around I don't know how many attempts. Let me just double check.
It was 9. So yeah, they tried to bring the project to liberalize abortion 9 times.
So basically what happened in Argentina is a little bit similar to what we started doing in with feminist movement in Poland in 2020. So basically tying the conversation to a wider issue of basically discriminating women and not allowing them to decide what they want to do with their bodies and with their lives. And then also linking it with also the actual reality of what that sort of abortion ban creates, because it doesn't mean abortions don't happen. It just means that it's more dangerous to access abortion. And this, it especially affects those who are the poorest, right? The women who cannot travel, women who don't have an ability and resources to sort of access more information and seek help. And it puts them in a very vulnerable position. But it does not at all mean that abortions don't happen. And also basically talking about educating women about and educating a wider society about the propaganda that women are told, right? The lack of resources on how to access, how to do abortions, the whole stigmatization. So we had one main organization, National Campaign for Legal, Safe and Free Abortion. That campaign was launched in 2005, and it grew over the next 15 years and basically started with just 70 organizations and then extended itself to 700. But what we can see here is that there's an actual structure emerging, right? There are actual sort of like smaller organizations that kind of work more locally, and then they create a forum to sort of connect with other similar organizations, and that's how they start to create a wide national campaign, and it turned into this green tide, right? Marea Verde.
It just doesn't just like rely on like spontaneous uprisings or like charismatic leaders or media campaigns, but there's a whole kind of grassroots networks. And like, you know, obviously Argentina, good news came in 2020. Then Mexico followed suit, Colombia. So yeah, big success stories in Latin America. But yeah, but also closer to home. I mean, you know, there's been success stories in Republic of Ireland. To an extent in Northern Ireland, or the North of Ireland, if you prefer, although, you know, that's also a case of abortion being legal but not really accessible. So a lot of women traveling to Britain, but still a step forward in Gibraltar, you know, still part of the British territory, part of, you know, UK territory. There was a referendum not that long ago. It was this year, last year. To liberalize abortion law. It's still not fully legalized, but once again, a massive kind of step forward. So yeah, you know, around the world, there are success stories. So it's not just like there are threats to women's rights, but there are feminist movements that are actually succeeding and are pushing in the right direction.
And I think we should definitely pay more attention to what they're doing. And I mean, for instance, Latin America also really focused on beside kind of working on the ground, trying to make abortion activists more visible, destigmatizing abortion, they also created actual international solidarity. So Argentina was very supportive of what was happening in Poland. A lot of prominent feminists and organizers sort of publicly spoke to support Poland. Marta Lempart, who, as we mentioned, was one of the main kind of figures behind All Poland Women's Strike, even invited her to speak. I think it was through Zoom because of the pandemic, but there were even discussions of bringing some of these activists to Poland to speak during the protests. And also we have this organization network called Red Compañera, I hope I pronounce it properly, which unites 15 Latin American countries to coordinate across borders. And this obviously testifies and shows that we are able to bring back, like, you know, well-organized feminist movement and just, you know, pull out things that are as effective as the right wing sort of efforts to ban. And I think one more thing that kind of is visible from this. So when we take a step back and look at where do we have the biggest push for abortion rights and where we have the biggest wins for feminist movements, it's actually the countries where abortion was not accessible or was very stigmatized. And now it's kind of turning around. So we have Latin America, we have places like Ireland, we have places like Gibraltar, we have places like Poland as well, right? Because despite the fact that there's a setback with this new law in 2020, there's actually a big win on the side of the debate. Whereas what we can see actually being a new trend is that countries that actually take abortion for granted start to lose that battle, because there's very few active organizations that are well-funded that are actually treated seriously by also like left, because a lot of the left just assumes, well, this is a won battle. So I think it's important to just highlight this is not something that we can just sort of treat as an ended topic, right? This would be a continual effort to push for legal abortion and to protect it.
So thank you for speaking to us. I really hope that in maybe 3, maybe 5 years we'll be recording an episode called How Abortion Rights Were Won in Poland, and we'll look back at what we're saying today and and what worked. I hope this will be a success story in the end, although currently it feels very uphill.
I think I'm more optimistic of that than a year or 2 years ago, because like I said, many things changed, not exactly in a way that we wanted to change, but the most important thing is public opinion, and with that we can really look into the future and hope for better.
Thank you both so much for this super interesting conversation. I really enjoyed discussing all these experiences and ideas for winning. And of course, we encourage you to subscribe and to follow the next episodes. And also have a look at our description to see Martina's handles and to follow for more resources.